Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I hope you have had a wonderful week. If you celebrate Christmas, I hope it was wonderful and relaxing and joyous and whatever else happy emotions you want to associate with it. If you don't celebrate, well, I still hope that your Tuesday was wonderful and relaxing in some way. I hope you're having a good week, and you know, this last week of 2018, I hope it's going well. I do have another interview to share with you today. This time, as I said at the end of the last episode, I am speaking with author David Sklar about his new book, Atlas of Men. This is a novel, but it is based on some real events. It is fascinating, disturbing. It kind of runs you through a whole range of emotions. I mean, it really is interesting. It made me angry and sad because these were based on real events. It made me fascinated to watch the main character kind of go through this journey of finding out answers to questions and exploring things in relationships that he hadn't explored in a while. And there's just a lot of different layers. And let me stop talking actually and give you the description of the book. And that is this: files from a secret research project show up on Dr. Robert Thames's doorstep, forcing him to think about something he's been avoiding: the degrading study at Danvers Academy, especially the naked photos of each student, including himself, taken at his prep school. He tracks down four close friends from school, and together they uncover the terrible truth of what was buried by the faculty, the school, and the boys themselves. Secrets. And a lot of things going on here, you know, a lot of things. There's lots, like I said, there's a lot of layers. There's a lot of things with, you know, consent, or in this case, the lack thereof. The students didn't know why they were being subjected to this. You just imagine you show up at a private school and you are told to take off all your clothes and they're going to photograph you, but you're not told why, you're not asked permission, your parents aren't told, etc. So that's just one element of this, but it does kind of lead into so many other things that happen, and I don't want to give things away because, like I said, there's so much that happens in here, and there's so many different levels and layers, and you really need to read it yourself to find out exactly why this was happening, why these papers suddenly just show up on Robert's doorstep, what he finds out, what all of these questions and opening up conversations with students that he had been with at the academy, etc. There's all kinds of things that come out of this. So again, the book is Atlas of Men, and I'm going to now let Dr. David Sklar talk about it, because obviously he can tell you so much more about it than I can. Oh, I will mention one thing before we get to the interview, and that is that during his introduction and a little later in the interview as well, there is a very barky dog that comes in. Not very long. Maybe it's a little distracting, but I think it's endearing, frankly. The authors, when I talk to them, are usually at home, and, you know, home often comes with barking dogs or other interruptions. So it's not long, and it doesn't really distract that much from the interview, but just thought I would warn you that there is a very loud dog in case you're like, wait, whoa, what was that? Let's go ahead and turn our attention to my interview with Dr. David Sklar about his book, Atlas of Men. Hi, David. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Sarah.
It's wonderful to have you here on the podcast. We are here to talk about your book, Atlas of Men. Before we get to the book, though, I would love for my listeners to get to know you a little bit. So if you could just share whatever you're comfortable sharing about yourself, that would be great.
Sure. Well, my real identity or my real job is that I'm a physician. I'm an emergency physician. And that was my training. And I worked in an academic medical center for most of my life, training emergency medicine residents, also medical students, and practicing physicians. And most recently, I have been the editor-in-chief of a journal that is mostly focused on how we help teachers and students to learn about medicine and become the best doctors that they can be. So that journal talks about professionalism and communications and going from being a novice to an expert, which is what most students are doing in medical school, learning all the various procedures. My main function is to try to educate people as to how to be the best teacher that they can be, and for students to become the best doctors that they can be. The other thing about me that maybe is a little bit unusual is that I had a fellowship that I did in Washington, D.C. on in health policy. And the health policy area that I worked on was the Affordable Care Act, and also areas around physician payments. So with all the changes politically around the Affordable Care Act, with the current administration, I think that has sort of become an area, I guess, that I've certainly become interested in, watching how that efforts, the efforts that we put in terms of the healthcare system have sort of been altered through the political process. And, you know, when those things happen, it affects the way that we educate our doctors. Anyway, so those are some other things that I do. I write on a regular basis. I write editorials for the journal, and those editorials usually are related to some of the key areas around education. And those are nonfiction, so they generally are about main topics that we're interested in medical education research.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it. So let's move on to the book. It is called Atlas of Men. And can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, so Atlas of Men is a book that explores the events around the arrival of a group of boxes on the doorstep of our main character, whose name is Robert Thames. Robert is a physician. He is an infectious disease doctor who goes around the world trying to identify new antibiotics, potentially through looking at indigenous plants and native medications and traditional kinds of methods that are being used, and tries to bring those back to the U.S. and then have them have research done on them to identify whether or not they actually may potentially turn into a medication. Anyway, he is surprised one day to receive these boxes that end up having files in them, and the files include pictures that were taken of him and his other classmates when they were students at a private school, a high school, many, many years before. And he had almost forgotten about those photographs, but those photographs were taken after he arrived. They were photographs that were taken when the students had to take off all of their clothes, and they never really knew what the purpose of the photos were. But in any case, these photos and files that were accumulated over many years end up on his doorstep, and he gets a letter that goes along with the files that explains that these files were part of a research study. and that the doctor at the school where he went had been collecting this information, participating in the research, and now was no longer able to continue that research because he was going into a assisted living and couldn't keep the materials any further. So he sends them to Robert because Robert is the son of a colleague of his that he had gone to college with and also at the same private school, with the hope that Robert would continue and publish this, what he felt was kind of important research. And he explains the purpose of the research was to try to identify characteristics that could be measured from the photographs about the individuals, things about their body type, and so on, that the main researcher who was doing the work and who had asked this particular doctor to participate had a theory that you could predict leadership and future occupation, things like that, based upon measurements that he identified, measurements of body types such as, and the theory is called somatotyping, so it was measurements of what they call ectomorphy, mesomorphy, and endomorphy, and what that means is ectomorphy was sort of the thin, narrow kind of person, and mesomorphy was the more muscular person, and endomorphy was sort of the Santa Claus, you know, round, jovial looking kind of person. And his theory was that this kind of measurement would have value in kind of moving people in the right direction for their future, that you could use these measurements so that people would end up being categorized perhaps in a way that would help them end up in the right career and become the person that they were supposed to be. So he gets these boxes of files and then has to decide what to do with this, whether to actually go along with the research and continue it or what he wants to do with it. And he as he thinks about it, he realizes that he never was even told about the research, had no idea that it was going on, and has sort of a kind of two reactions. One is that he's very angry that it was done, and that in fact that he was classified, and that he looks at his own file and finds certain predictions that were upsetting to him, and but then he's also curious about what does this really mean, and might there actually be some validity here, and is it really worth pursuing? So he then makes contact with several of his friends. It turns out he has a group of other friends who went to the school who were all kind of outcasts in a sense. The people who were his friends didn't really feel like they fit in, and they all kind of got together playing cards. They played bridge together, and that was sort of their social group. And he gets together with them over the telephone, and in the process of talking with them, finds out one of them is actually very, very ill. That one asks him to come and talk with him, meet with him, and he says he has some really important things to discuss. And so as part of this whole process of looking at these files and this research project, there's this additional issue about illness and potentially the death of this friend of his. There's also some other issues that are going on with this friend of his that, as it turns out, there was a love triangle, his friend and himself and a woman that they both met in high school were in love with. And so that was a love triangle that had never been resolved. So there's sort of this little subtext of maybe coming to some resolution about that many, many years later. In any case, the book then just follows this journey of our main character, Robert Thames, as he tries to unravel this project and what it was all about, and get back together with his friends and try to make sense out of it. And in the process of that, they find that there are several other kind of concerning secrets that had been hidden. And so they have to then decide what they want to do about that. So that's sort of a very, very, you know, brief kind of thumbnail about what Atlas of Men tries to deal with. And, you know, it's about identity. You know, who are we? And are we sort of fated to be a certain kind of person based upon our body or our genetics or things like that? Or do we have choices that we can make that can move us in many different directions that have very little to do with those kinds of genetic predictors? So there's pieces like that, and issues related to messages we get as we're growing up about race and ethnicity, and even things like, you know, how we look. Are we handsome, ugly, fat, thin, things like that, and how do those affect how we think about ourselves, and maybe how we limit ourselves in terms of the chances we take and the opportunities that we avail ourselves of.
So let me go ahead and jump in here. That gives you a really good idea of what's going on in this book, but we do have to take our first break of the podcast. Before we jump to that break, I want to talk to you once again about Audible. And I've been talking about audiobooks forever on the podcast. I've been talking to you about how much I love audiobooks, how much I love Audible. And just want to remind you that maybe you have a New Year's resolution coming up and you want to read more, or you want to listen to something new, and so you're exploring options. Well, Audible can help you with that. If you go to audible.com/GSMC Book Review or text GSMC Book Review to 500-500, you can start your 30-day free trial, which will include a free audiobook. You can explore so many different genres, from memoir to novel to mystery to self-help, nonfiction. All kind, whatever you're interested in, you're going to find something on Audible. They have a huge selection. In addition to that title you get every month with your one Audible credit, you also get to choose two Audible originals, and they have some really interesting selections that you're not going to find anywhere else. So that is three titles each month when you sign up. Again, just go to audible.com/GSMC Book Review or text GSMC Book Review to 500-500 to start your free trial today. We are going to take our break, and so stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be talking more with author David Sklar about his book, Atlas of Men. You are listening to the GSMC Book Review podcast, and we'll be right back.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review podcast. I'm speaking today with author David Sklar about his book, Atlas of Men. Let's go ahead and get right back into that interview. There really are a lot of layers going on within this book and within this story. Now, it is a novel, but it's based on real events. So can you talk a little bit, please, about how you decided what to leave in that was the real events, what you fictionalized, what went into that process?
Well, so the actual events of the photographs that were taken, those did happen. I mean, and I did go to a school, Phillips Exeter Academy, where all of us were photographed, and that occurred somewhere in the first few weeks of arriving. And we were photographed without our clothes on. Very embarrassing, kind of humiliating experience, and there was no information given to us about why this was done, and our parents never found out about it. And so that piece was true. Now, the actual characters are fictional, although I'm sure all of them have bits and pieces of people that I've known. But I created the characters who are in the book, and I did it actually because I wanted to have characters who would see this experience and even these the socialization that occurred through the prism of kind of different being, kind of different people, different upbringings, and different sort of life courses that they were on, and I thought that would be actually an interesting way to explore some of these themes, to try to see it through the eyes of people who were coming from, again, different backgrounds and had different goals in their lives, and how being part of this research study and being potentially pushed in one direction or another based on some of the data that was accumulated on them, how that might play out. So there was definitely some actual events that sort of inspired, you know, the writing of this book. And you know, also, unfortunately, at the school that I attended, there were other things that happened. Sexual predators who were there on the faculty, and, you know, another subtext in this novel is that some of the sexual predators potentially could have access to the photographs and to the research, and how would that affect them and the relationship between them and students. I think that's obviously a fairly timely issue right now, because I think we're recognizing, as people go back into their own histories, that sexual humiliation, sexual exploitation, unfortunately, is far more common than I think any of us ever imagined it would be. And I think most people probably kept these kinds of events secret. They didn't want to talk about them because they're embarrassing, or they kind of felt like maybe they had contributed to them in some way, and so we didn't talk about them. But now, you know, people are talking about them, and I think so. You know, this book does have some actual events that sort of inspired it.
Yeah, it's both fascinating and very disturbing. Can you talk a little bit more about the main character, Robert? What is it about Robert that you think will resonate with the readers?
Well, so Robert is he's sort of a cautious guy. He grows up in the Philippines, and his parents, one is a Filipino woman, and the other is a U.S. Soldier who's there visiting the Philippines. But he's actually brought up by missionaries, because his dad dies and his mother also dies, and so he is brought up by missionaries, and it's really the missionary dad who had gone to the same school who kind of moves him in the direction of what his future life will be by deciding that this will be a good educational experience for him. So Robert is one of these people that he's doesn't really feel like he fits anywhere, because his racially and culturally, he comes from one background. He's kind of then thrown into this other culture at this private school, and he looks different, and he talks differently, and his all of his cultural backgrounds or background is very different from that of the other students. So he's always a little bit afraid that he's not going to be successful, because he's so different, and he doesn't really know how to behave the way that will give him the chance to be successful. And so he's trying to read the signals around him and and kind of like I obviously he's sort of a chameleon. He's trying to fit into his environment without giving too much away about who he thinks he is or who he feels he is deep down inside. And so the pictures, I think in some ways are a metaphor for this same the same idea of what is the proper way to look, or is there an ideal body type or an ideal characteristic that that you need to have to potentially be successful in the world. At the time that he goes off to this school, I think his friends and the environment around him would suggest that being white and being from an upper class and having the proper wearing the right clothes and speaking with the right accent and so on is what you need to do to be successful. So he's kind of a cautious guy, and he's trying to figure out how to do that, how he can be successful, even though he knows that he doesn't really have those characteristics that that he sees around him, and that becomes sort of part of his struggle in life, and something that he ends up, I think, having to overcome as he evolves in the book, letting go of this idea that he does have to be something different from who he feels he is to be successful, and ultimately making decisions that may be risky but will ultimately allow him to grapple with some of the abuse and some of the exploitation that happened to him earlier in his life.
Okay, so can you talk a little bit about how Robert evolves throughout the book? There's a lot that happens to him. So just talk about his evolution as he searches into questions of his past and everything else that goes on within the novel.
What happens is, at the beginning, he's I think he's very cautious, and he's afraid to confront people who have power over him, who he feels can cause him to have to go back to the Philippines and lose out on the opportunities that he thinks he might be able to have in life. He actually has a sexual relationship with a young woman his age, and he has to make decisions about that. And is he going to be able to commit himself to her, or is he going to let go of that? What is he going to do? Is he going to basically try to protect himself and abandon, the chances to have that relationship evolve and become something important in his life, or is he going to take some risks? And at the beginning, I think he's sort of cautious and afraid, and he also isn't sure what to do about this close friend of his that was also involved with this young woman. And then over time, and this is when most of the book occurs, he gets I think inspired to maybe think about things differently, and realize that he can actually take some risks. He can oppose some of the people who are trying to get him to turn in the files, for example, and let go of all of his research, turn it in, and not do anything about it. That he can actually get together with his friends and create a sort of an oppositional force that stands up for him and his friends and what was done to them, and also potentially reconnect with this woman that he loved but was afraid to commit to.
Mm-hmm. This isn't your first book. Your first book is called La Clinica. So can you please talk a little bit about that book?
Yeah, La Clinica was a memoir. And I think La Clinica in some ways led me to this book. But La Clinica was a story about how I ended up going into medicine. I actually worked in a little clinic called La Clinica before I started medical school as a volunteer. And La Clinica is about my experience with the people of this little village, and which didn't have any electricity, didn't have any doctors. And so it starts off really telling the stories about the people and their lives and a place that really it doesn't exist in that way anymore. Now that little village has electricity and a lot of things are very different about it. And so it talks about how I learned medicine and how I learned it before I even went to medical school and how that affected my own priorities in my medical education and then my medical practice, how it led me to work with populations that were underserved and go into emergency medicine. And it also confronts issues around good and evil. The person who had started this clinic, La Clinica, had a lot of very good characteristics, was willing to devote his life to starting this little clinic and trying to provide resources to the people in the village, but also had some other very troubling aspects. So how do you make sense out of someone like that who has some really remarkably positive characteristics and also some very troubling ones? And I realized that this person in many ways had become a mentor for me. And what do I, you know, how do I deal with that? The fact that that he's influenced me in a lot of positive ways as far as my career goes. But over time, as I learn about some of these negative things that he has done, I then have to kind of rethink what what that mentorship and what what that relationship means to me. La Clinica happened, I was writing the book at a time in my own life where I was trying to relook at priorities and what I wanted to do, and even my own relationships with my wife and what was going to happen to our marriage. So there were things like that that I thought potentially were being affected by how I had, the time and the commitments I was making to my career. And so how do I find the right balance in my own life between kind of personal relationships and commitment to patients and career, things like that.
I am going to jump in here again so we can take our second break of the podcast. Before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit more about Audible. I mentioned the free trial and that free book that you get. You can take those books take your library with you and whenever you cancel, and you can cancel any time. Those books are yours to keep regardless of if you cancel or when you cancel. As I said, they have a huge selection. You get the one title each month and two selections from Audible Originals, which have selections that you cannot find anywhere else. Again, are you thinking about doing more reading this year, or are you trying to tackle that huge to-be-read list that you never seem to quite get through? Audible can help you with that. Just go to www.audible.com/GSMCbookreview or text GSMCbookreview, all one word, to 500-500 to start your library today. Again, it's audible.com/GSMCbookreview or text GSMCbookreview to 500-500. Start your free trial, start your audiobook library, and start 2019 off with adding to your list and getting some audiobooks in there. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking more about David's writing and what might be next for him, etc. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and we'll be right back.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast and the conclusion to my interview with author David Sklar. You mentioned that in addition to writing a memoir and a novel, you are also the editor-in-chief of Academic Medicine and that you write a lot for that. So talk a little bit about those three different types of writing that you do, how they vary, how they differ, how they may be similar in some ways. Just talk a little bit about the various types of writing that you do.
Oh, I think they're different in many ways. To me, writing Atlas of Men was fascinating because unlike when I'm writing nonfiction, I'm writing editorials or other kinds of nonfiction. In those situations, you're pretty structured based upon what you know and what references you're using, and so that kind of where you're headed is relatively clear. But with Atlas of Men, I thought I knew where I was going. I thought I had a general sense as to where I wanted the novel to go. But once I started writing, I found myself sometimes going in other directions. And there were certain aspects, as I wrote the book, that I realized if I wanted it to be successful, I had to kind of delve into them in more detail, some things that were somewhat painful to go in and talk about, that if I really wanted the story to make sense, you know, that I had to go into some kind of dark places that I didn't really want to go into. And so that was a very different process from writing in nonfiction, where generally at least the emotional and personal pieces are not quite as, I guess they're not quite as clear.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine it's a very different process. So what's next for you? Are you planning another book? Are you working on another book?
Well, I think right now I'm trying to get people to know about this one and read it and talk about it. And because I think there's a lot of issues that I talk about, you know, some of them around identity and, you know, making sure that we give people the opportunity to kind of feel that they can be who they feel like they want to be and not that they're limited. So, and I think that's a really important message for our time. But also there's other issues around research and how we protect human subjects and the fact that, at least in this case, you know, human subjects, those of us who were photographed, weren't protected in any way. And unfortunately, there's a history of human subjects not being protected adequately in medical research. And so I think the book is important for us to read and think about in terms of some of those lessons that we can learn. But outside of that, I probably will do more writing about healthcare in general and how we can create a healthcare system that I think will work for our country. I think we're really struggling with that right now. So I think I'll probably have some nonfiction writing on that. And then I actually right now I'm working on some stories for my grandson who's just a year and a half, and I want to write some little kids books for him. But so we'll see where those go. But you know, maybe there'll be some more fiction. I don't know. A lot of it I have to kind of feel like I've kind of done as much as I can for this book first before I get going on something big. Probably write some short stories too, because short stories are a little bit you know, you can do those and you don't have to quite make the same commitment to a whole novel.
Right. So it sounds like you've been writing in various formats throughout your career, maybe throughout your life. Is writing a novel or writing a memoir something that you've always wanted to do, or did you come to that decision later in life?
You know, it's funny. I always love writing, and I did do creative writing when I was at Stanford as an undergraduate, and I loved doing it. And but I also really loved being involved with people and their lives in medicine, and I wanted, you know, I wanted to be able to do something to improve people's lives through you know, through being a doctor. And then I realized in my work as particularly as an emergency physician that there were so many stories that came my way, seeing what happens to people all of a sudden when they encounter an emergency, when something changes in their life and they go from just having a regular day to suddenly ending up in the emergency department and maybe facing life or death or a major change in their life and who they're going to be, that there were opportunities to combine both writing and medicine. So I hope I'll be able to continue to do both, and I think I've been very fortunate that I've been able to have a career that allows me to share stories with people as a doctor, and then write about stories, hopefully, to people in the literary world or in the reading and writing world, and be able to be part of both of those worlds.
Mm-hmm. And out of your unique perspective, then, do you have advice for aspiring authors?
Well, one thing I will say is that I never realized how hard it was going to be to write a novel. And I think a lot of us in medicine, I think we think, well, we've done all this work to be a doctor, and we know what that's like, and how to get the skills to be whether it's a surgeon or an internist or whatever. And we think, well, okay, I've mastered that, and why shouldn't I be able to write a book? But I would say that writing a book and writing a novel is a completely different skill set, and I have great respect for people who are able to do that. It certainly took me a lot longer than I ever imagined it would, and I think that if you do want to write and you're serious about it, you need to have a group of people around you who will help you, who will give you feedback, and at least for me, none of this came very easily. I, you know, had many, many drafts before I got to something that I felt good about. You know, I was very fortunate. I have another physician writer friend named Frank Heiler, and Frank and I have shared each other's kind of writing careers. He was one of my residents in emergency medicine when I was a chair of the department. And I've learned so much from him, and watching his writing career evolve and his medical career and trying to combine it. And we give each other feedback on our writing, and I think that's really been helpful. But it's very hard to do in an isolated way. And I, as I said, I think you do need kind of a group of people, a community to kind of help look at what you're doing and give you feedback, because I think it's very hard to do just by yourself to know whether what you've done is good or, you know, needs, you know, has holes or whatever, to get it to the place where it is going to be understandable and make sense to others.
Thank you for that. When you have time to read, do you have favorite authors or genres?
Well, yeah, I do. You know, I recent book I read actually was The Sympathizer by Nguyen, I think is his name. Interestingly, his main character was a Vietnamese fellow who, as it turns out, was a spy and had also issues around identity of who he was. Was he kind of a loyal South Vietnamese kind of supporter of the regime there, or was he more supportive of the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong and so on? This was so in the book, it's around the time when Vietnam is sort of falling from the U.S. Involvement. And so I found that book really resonated with me because the character in some ways reminded me of my character in the book in Alice of N. Robert Thames, who also was kind of trying to struggle with his identity of where does he fit and who is he and what does it really mean to be successful and have a meaningful life. I think other things that I've read, I actually just read the Saunders book, Lincoln and the Bardo, which still is kind of a book I think about because it explores death and what, you know, when you think about death, what does that really mean in terms of the life that you led before you got to death? And kind of uncompleted journeys, tasks, or things that were potentially important for you, and you know what can we do as we look back on our lives to think about the things that will be most important in the time that we have? You know, because I think none of us know how long we have, and certainly as an emergency physician, that resonates with me because I take care of people who are dying all the time. And I know that sometimes, you know, when I see them, you know, they're in that place somewhere in between life and death, and it's not clear which way they're going to go and how much I can do to change that. And mm-hmm. and so, anyway, that particular book resonated with me because I just realized that it's a very it's a very strange place, you know, as people are in that in-between state of having lived a life and potentially having that life end. And, you know, what do we think about during those times, during those moments? And if you do have a chance to come back, how does that change you? You know, how are you different when you've actually come close to death? So anyway, yeah, those are two books that I think most recently I've been reading.
Thank you. If people want to learn more about you or your writing or this new book, Atlas of Men, tell them where they can find you. Do you have a website?
I have a website, davidpsclar.com. And so you can just go to that, and it does, it talks about Atlas of Men, and also I think has some of my other writings. And Google me, and I have a lot of academic kind of writing that if people are interested in the issue of medical education and some of the issues that we deal with in healthcare and health services, there I have citations about that. But yeah, my website probably is probably the best place to go.
Perfect. Thank you for that information. We have talked about several subjects, and so I'm just wondering if there's anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to cover in terms of Atlas of Men or your writing or anything that we haven't touched on.
Well, I think maybe the last thing I can say is that I think it's really important as you know we look at the world around us right now and all of the confusion about you know, about truth and about what's happening in the world and you know how we should respond to that. That those of us who write and who are good at it have our voices, you know, share our voices and our thoughts in ways that can influence some of the discourse around us. Because I guess I really worry that. That a lot of the discourse is led by people on various news channels, television. You know, people tend to watch, you know, whether it be Fox News or whatever, and I think they get a very warped view of what's important and how to think through problems and how to understand them. And so I really feel like the writers among us have an opportunity and really, I think, a responsibility to try to help our population understand, you know, some of the threats that we're confronting and some of the potential ways that we might be able to address them. You know, I also think, you know, we're losing a generation, my dad's generation. They're all the kind of dying off who got together around World War II and came together and learned a lot about each other and had a kind of a common goal or a common enemy, and that affected who they were for the rest of their lives. And I think now we're kind of an isolated group of different people in this country. And I hope that the writers among us can find, you know, help us find some of the commonality so that we do come together around the things that we all believe in are important, and that we, you know, we have a world for our children and our grandchildren to inherit, because I do worry about that.
Thank you for that. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your weekend, the weekend before Christmas, to come and talk to me. Again, the book is Atlas of Men. I really appreciate you being my guest today.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you once again to Dr. David Sklar for taking the time to speak with me about his book, Atlas of Men, and his other writings. I really appreciate it. And, you know, thank you to his dog for joining in the podcast and putting in his or her two cents there. You know, dogs want to have an opinion too, and they like to let their voice be known. Well, at least mine do. They are very interrupting puppies. So thank you so much to David Sklar for joining me. If you are interested in this book, you are in luck, because I do have copies to give away. It's very easy to enter our giveaways. All you have to do is go to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and comment on episode 131, Interview with David Sklar, and you will automatically be entered to win a copy of Atlas of Men. Again, that's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, episode 131, Interview with David Sklar. Just make a comment. It doesn't have to be anything deep or profound. Just comment. A reminder also that the giveaways from last week are still going on for Of Another Time and Place and Learning to Love. Of Another Time and Place by Brad Schaefer and Learning to Love by Jennifer Wilk. You can still enter those. So again, go to our social media and comment on the appropriate posts and you will be entered to win. So three very different but equally interesting books that you can enter to win right now from the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you are having a wonderful week. And if you are on vacation this week between Christmas and New Year's, wonderful. I hope that you can have time to go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thanks.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.